So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Oh. Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to...
politics.com and edspringston.com. You can get all the latest on everything we've got going on. For you guys new to the show, call-in numbers, as always here, 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334. For you regulars who are already in the listening queue, we appreciate you as always. Just make sure you hit that number one on your dial pad if you want to be heard on air, and we will get you on as soon as possible. Looks like Mr. Martin is running a few minutes late, which sometimes happens, of course, because he's running that business that Barack Obama built for him. So sometimes he runs a little bit late, but we're going to carry on. We have some local news. Actually, a surprise to me, to be honest with you. But Louisville Metro Council member Ken Fleming, District 7 Council member, Republican Ken Fleming, just announced today that he's going to retire at the end of his current term, which expires at the end of the year. And he's not going to seek re-election. He put out a news release today. It's interesting because of the timing for me. From what I understand, according to the news release, Fleming goes on to say that he's deeply honored the residents of District 7, chose three times to represent them to Louisville Metro Council. After considerable thought, however, I've decided to not seek re-election next year so I can focus on family and the Kilgore Counseling Center. My interest in public policy remains strong. I plan to remain engaged and keep my options open for future office. And, of course, there's always kinds of things like, you know, all the other stuff, that Louisville is a great place to live, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it was interesting because, you know, Ken Fleming, and this is his third term. At the end of this year, it expires. But Ken Fleming has been there. And we make this announcement knowing that there's, you know, we're going into election season. I mean, it's not like this was a, a crazy year. Nobody knew that an election was coming up, especially when you're a politician. But we make that announcement a week prior, 1 week prior to the filing deadline. That is probably one of the biggest concerns I've got with me. Good luck to Ken Fleming. I think he's done a great job on the council. I know that Ken has, he's been under a little bit of stress because of the job and everything else that he's had to do, and to try to take care of council just too. I get that, but I'm just kind of curious why the announcement wasn't made sooner than 1 week prior to the filing deadline. So I'm not sure what to think about that. Hello, Mr. Martin. How are you?
All right, Mr. Springton. I have no idea where you are right now.
Well, I figured about it since you just got here. I'm just talking about this Ken Fleming announcement today. He announced today that he is not going to seek re-election this year. But the announcement was made just today, 1 week before the filing deadline ended. I'm kind of curious about the timing.
Sometimes, as you and I know, especially myself as of late, I think sometimes these things happen because it's not like he didn't know it was going to happen. But a lot of would-be people maybe outside of the inner circle of the party elites didn't know it was going to happen, but the right people knew it was going to happen, so they're ready to go.
Well, it was just interesting because, this is a three-term councilman in District 7, Republican fat, and as we know, the Republican simply has no power on the council anymore. I mean, it's 15 to 11 is the breakdown between the Democrats and Republicans. And I'm trying to decide. I understand that, with the Kilgore Center and everything else that he does, Kim Fleming is a very busy man. And I get family comes first. That's always been my first priority. But like I said, I just don't understand the timing of it. I mean, it wasn't like an election snuck up and nobody knew that this was an election year, especially when you're the elected councilman. I just think the announcement could have been made sooner. He was already thinking about this. I'm not sure when he made the decision. But I think it was a decision, if it was already a thought process, then maybe it was something that should have been made sooner so that we would have more time to find qualified candidates, or candidates in general, run for that seat. Because I think it's doing a disservice to the District 7 constituents. And I'm a fan of Ken Fleming. I mean, I like the guy. He's done an excellent job. But the timing of it just really bothers me a little bit.
A lot of it, and like I say, I like Ken Fleming too, but part of me sits back and wonders, as we know how party politics goes, Republican or Democrat. I think what we'll find, what will be very telling, will be to see who is ready to go and who is ready to file.
Well, I made some calls today, I understand. I did make some calls today, and from what I understand, there's at least four people who are giving it serious consideration. I'm sure that we're going to get one or two of those people to go ahead and run. Let's face it, District 7 is east of Louisville. It should be a solid Republican seat no matter who you put in that category, okay? But it's just, I'm just kind of curious why. I don't know. It's just striking me as odd that we do this 1 week prior. We do have a citizen's alert, if you will. We want to make sure the people in Louisville know that there is a big scam going on. According to Jefferson County Sheriff's Office, they're warning everybody now about scammers calling to tell you you've missed jury duty and you now owe a fine anywhere between $1,000 and $2,000. And the Sheriff's Department wants to make sure they're telling everybody they have nothing to do with this. They don't even accept cash, check, or credit cards. The only thing they basically accept are green dot prepaid debit cards. And that's something you got to go to the sheriff's office for. So, we need to let everybody know apparently that there's been at least one elderly person who was scammed out of $1,500 because of this. And that's the thing that really bothers me. These scammers always go after the elderly and the poor and the people who flat out can't afford it. You know what I mean? It's just disgusting.
Well, I think they go after a broad spectrum of people, but I think you find that if an elderly person hasn't been burned yet, they tend to be a little more trusting, especially of authority type. Somebody speaks with a certain authority and says they're with a group that traditionally people brought up in Beaver Cleaver's era would would yield to authority and wouldn't question it. So I think it probably, it's kind of, I have a hard time thinking that they have a database that says these are old people. I think just unfortunately, older people oftentimes fall for these things.
Well, that's true, and it's really sad. We are going to get into some Obamacare tonight, guys. We've got to. We're also going to follow up a little bit last we talked about unemployment. But I tell you, before I get there, I really want to put this out there. This is something that is just disturbing. It shouldn't surprise anybody who is getting disgusted by liberalism in this country. But New York Governor Andrew Cuomo went on record, in an interview on Friday, saying that he believes pro-life activists, anti-gay activists, anybody who supports the Second Amendment gun rights, that, and he went on record to say that they are not welcome in his state. This is the New York governor telling you that if you're pro-life, anti-gay, or gunner, get the hell out of his state. They don't want you. How in the world can a governor be that brazen?
Well, he's saying now he was taken out of context, but I tell you, to even get close to that, you know, it just gets back to the ever tolerant liberal. Some liberals, salt of the earth. They are absolutely tolerant, you know, they respect your views, they nod, they don't want to argue with you. You know, you have your views, they have theirs. But yeah, some of them, especially the elites, they, you know, once they decide they're right, or even, you know, mostly right, that just makes you completely wrong, and it makes you completely useless. He's in Cuomo. He is absolutely a political elite. You know, he has the circle his he grew up in, with his father, was mayor and governor.
Right.
Or I don't know if his dad was ever governor, but yeah, he grew up in that elitist circle. He's a Cuomo. It might as well be a Kennedy in Massachusetts. So, yeah, he has a skewed view of how things work. And the thing that especially stuns me about it is it's like, oh, really? Okay. I've been to Buffalo. I've not been to New York City. I've been to a number of cities in the state of New York. And there's a huge Catholic population.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just, oh, my goodness, you're coming out, you're saying if there's no, you're anti-abortion, Catholic, then no use for you in this state. It's like, okay, well, you know, they're known for their outspoken bishops and cardinals, so hey, have at it, Mr. Cuomo. You know, I don't think the bishop or the cardinal of New York is really going to be kowtowed by you. He's going
to
fire back, so enjoy.
Well, it's fascinating because, you know, I mean, the fact that he would be so brazen. I mean, what he said was, and he can't walk this back and say it's taken out of context. These are his own words. What he said was, conservatives' problem is not me and the Democrats. Their problem is themselves. Who are they? Are they these extreme conservatives who are right to life, pro-assault weapon, anti-gay? Because if that's who they are, and they're the extreme conservatives, they have no place in the state of New York because that's not who New Yorkers are. Now, here's a guy who's elected to represent everybody.
Yep.
And we wonder why there is such a divide between the American people and Democrats and Republicans and everything else. This is a clear example of that. I mean, Sean Hannity was so angry about this. You know, he declared, you know, yesterday when this came out, he declared that he was sick of New York, and he's going to leave New York and take all his jobs with him. I mean, he went on to say he was born and raised in New York, you know, but he's getting sick of paying he's not going to pay the 10% tax anymore. He lives in the second highest property tax county in the entire country in Nassau County, you know, and he said, to hell with it. He says, I'm going to go ahead and go down to Florida or Texas, pay no state income tax. And I'm going to go down there, and I'm going to take all the jobs that I supply with my million-dollar industry right here in New York with me. And I don't blame him.
Yep.
I don't blame him.
Actually, I wouldn't blame him anyway. I mean, especially, I was a little late getting to the show. and I'm outside cutting firewood in this damn weather. It's like, dude, if you have the capabilities to move down to Florida, or better yet, get into the Keys and still conduct your business uninterrupted,
right?
I just have to ask you this time of year, why the hell aren't you there?
But, well, there you,
know,
you go.
If you're in a high tax state, and you have, you know, your portable, you know, you can pick it up and go anywhere. All you need is a studio. I'm wondering why you're there in the first place, to be real honest with you.
Well, I hear you. You know, and you look at Rush Limbaugh. Rush Limbaugh used to be in New York, you know, and look at him. He's a mega empire. You know, he's got a bunch of jobs to take to go with him. He moved to Florida because of New York's policies. Glenn Beck used to live in New York, and all of his business there, he went and took all of his jobs with him to Texas. You know, so, I mean, it's just incredible that this governor is that asinine to, I mean, we already know this kind of crap that goes on, but it's incredible to me that he would be that asinine to make that statement. I was just shocked by it, and I figured everybody else would.
Well, I'm not shocked because, I say, just like a Kennedy in Massachusetts, Cuomo has probably, honestly, not had to work a hard day in his life, manual labor. He's always been political, you know, of his name. He's always been able to win his races, whether he wants to be attorney general or whatever, even though he wasn't a very good one. You know, Schneiderman's much better than he is. But,
right.
You know, it just comes with the territory. If you're brought up rich and conservative, you're going to think that, you know, you're not going to have a, in a lot of cases, you're going to slip up like Mitt Romney did about the 47%. It's just your perspective, and as we talk, it's not a Democrat or Republican thing. It's just like you say, uniparty, and there's an elite class of an elite political class that, in most cases, does not connect with us, does not empathize with us. They, you know, they hang with their inner circle of friends who are powerful enough in most cases to, you know, to maintain power. And sometimes accumulate power, more power. They don't give a rat's ass about us.
Well, I agree with you, and it's getting a little bit ridiculous. We're going to take our first break of the night. When we get back, we've got a whole lot more coming at you, and I'll explain it when we get here. We'll see you in just a couple of minutes. You're listening to the Ed Spring Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
We are back, folks. And remember, as always, 858-683-1326 and 502-805-0234 are the numbers to call in. And for you guys in the listening queue, as always, thank you. Just hit that little number one on your dial pad. We'll get you on there as soon as possible. You know, Ed, I tell you, it's continuing to get crazy. All the lies and deception with all the numbers that come out of Washington, D.C. and the Barack Obama administration. You know, we have been told, you know, for so long that Obamacare was going to actually have more Americans insured. That's why we needed it, to insure the uninsured. And yet what we really have is nothing more than a scam to make insurance companies more money. I mean, it's basically a taxpayer-funded shell game, you know, where Obamacare forces your insurer to cancel your insurance. Then you have to re-enroll at a higher rate through the exchanges, and then they say this is some kind of success. Well, we also know that there's some actual reporting going on, and this is great. I actually caught this over at Breitbart today. But somebody did some actual reporting and discovered this. 65% to 89% of Obamacare exchanges, depending on which way you want to include them, the enrollees were previously insured. So think about that for a minute. 89% of the people that are being forced into Obamacare already had insurance. Health Yep. Markets, which is an insurance holding company in Texas, conducted its own survey and said that based on their own survey of 7,500 people that they enrolled into these exchange-based plans, only 35% were previously uninsured, and 10% previously had employer-sponsored coverage that they lost. So they were forced into the exchange because the employers cut back hours or whatever and quit offering benefits. So what does that tell us, Ed?
Well, it tells us a lot, actually a lot of things. Now, granted, some of the employer-based insurance was probably pretty crappy. But, hey, it was there. The employees accepted the terms of their employment, you know, between benefits and pay. So, you know, so be it. It also tells us that a lot of people who are buying insurance, you know, got canceled because maybe the insurance policy they liked, you know, for whatever reason, and they had enough money in the bank, they could figure they could cover, a certain deductible or figured they didn't need a certain level of coverage. They had insurance. It got canceled. But these are people who maybe have families and put a high value, and they understand the need for insurance where they are in their lives. So they bought insurance and probably weren't real happy about it. And it also, the thing that gets me is I'm sitting here thinking, okay, of those who were uninsured before, I would really be curious to know how many that did not have insurance that now have insurance, or are actually either heavily subsidized or have gone full Medicaid.
Well, it's interesting here because you bring up the Medicaid too. Let me get a couple other stats for you. 15% of those people that I just mentioned already had coverage, but because their old plans didn't cover things like birth control, they were automatically illegal by Obamacare, and the insurer was forced to cancel. When you talk about the Medicaid and everything else, the numbers coming out of Obamacare expansion of Medicaid are as full of lies as anything. According to a journal report, they just did a new analysis. The Obama administration is telling everybody that, you know, they've signed up more than 4 million Americans for Medicaid coverage, but that turns out to be false. Sean Trend over at Real Clear Politics did the math and found out that only 5 to 7.5% of those enrollees in Medicaid were due to Obamacare. So what they're essentially doing is taking anybody that rolls into Medicaid from natural progression, because that is millions every year, thanks to baby boomers, right? You've got all these people going into Medicaid. They're actually saying that's because of Obamacare. Well, that, in effect, is a lie. So you take 5% of 4 million Americans, you're looking at what, 40,000, almost 400,000, whatever it works out to be? I mean, that's incredible. That's incredible.
Yeah, I'd also be interested to know if, you know, it always gets back to, you know, they sometimes it's not what they tell you, it's what they don't tell you. Okay, so you've signed up X amount of people in Medicaid. How many people on Medicaid have left the rolls, you know, because they died?
Well, yeah, you got that too.
I would be interested in what the net gain is. Like you say, they talk in gross numbers and say, oh, well, we signed this many people up. Okay, well, how many people did you sign out? know?
Right, right. Oh, I get you there. It's interesting. It's interesting too, though, Ed, because they continue. You know, when they say that 5 million people have signed up for Obamacare, that's not exactly true. 5 million people have visited the website. You know, they're counting website visits as actual signups, and that's not true either. You know, and then you've got all these state exchanges. You know, I mean, things are so crazy, it just defies logic. And I tell you why it's important. There's an article out today that came out by Thomas Sowell. For you guys that know Thomas Sowell, you know what he's about. He's a conservative Republican. But it's interesting because I looked at some of the things in this article. I don't typically follow the same people all the time, and I don't follow Thomas Sowell on a regular basis, but today. And I found it very fascinating because we're hearing all this talk about this war on poverty. Back in August of 1964, you know, we started this so-called war on poverty. It was signed by Governor Lyndon Johnson, or I'm sorry, President Lyndon Johnson, forgive me, okay? But we've had all of these things, you know, they were marking this 50th anniversary, which actually doesn't occur until August of this year. But when we look at the facts of this so-called war on poverty, it has been a complete failure. It's been a complete failure. And we can talk about that and prove it just based on the numbers alone. The war on poverty, as it was described by President Kennedy, who started this before he was assassinated, Kennedy said we must find ways of returning far more of our dependent people to independence. That's what the war on poverty was supposed to do. Lyndon Johnson continued that and said that the purpose of the war on poverty was to make taxpayers out of tax eaters. He's the one who gave us the slogan, give a hand up, not a hand out. And yet here we are, 50 years later, we've spent trillions and trillions of dollars, and more than half of our population, or I'm sorry, right at half of our population, is dependent on government handouts.
Yeah.
There's never been a war on poverty.
Now, a lot of the population, because of the boomers are turning, you know, so that, along the lines of Mitt Romney's 47%, but that's true. But, you know, I thought you were going there, but you didn't. You know, Lyndon Johnson is also reputed to have said a few other things about the war on poverty as it related to the Voter Rights Act.
Go ahead.
You know where I'm going.
Yes, I do. I mean, go ahead. Finish it.
Yeah, I mean, well, when they did the Voter Rights Act, and Lyndon Johnson, you know, to his credit, he really fought for civil rights. But once the civil rights were granted, he's also reputed to say, you know, whether you believe it or not like one of his speeches, but he's also reputed to have, you know, I'm paraphrasing, that, you know, once blacks can vote, is that when he started this war on poverty and the Great Society and stuff, he pretty much has been reputed to have said that this is going to lock the black vote up for the Democrats for generations to come.
Actually, that's irrefutable, because there is a YouTube video with Lyndon Johnson on the phone making that statement with the recording. I mean, I've tried to look at the lip sync on it, and I believe it's true. You know, we do have that at YouTube. Go to YouTube and look that up. You can find it, folks. But it's really startling because, you know, this whole war on poverty was supposed to make people independent, to give them a hand up for a temporary time. It was designed to give people a chance to get above the poverty line, all right, and things like that. But the reality is, and here's the reality, this is why I like Thomas Sowell. He doesn't just put things out there, he backs it up. But the reality is that the number of people who lived below the official government poverty line had been already declining since 1960. By the time all this stuff started, the poverty, the people that were on poverty and depending on the government, was half of what it had been in 1950. So when you look at all this dependency and everything else, you know, when without counting government benefits, the total decline was about a third of people that had been government dependent, about a third total, they were down from 1950 to 1965. So this really wasn't anything. This really wasn't anything but a scam. It wasn't anything but a scam.
And you have to figure those numbers existed with Jim Crow laws and no civil rights, so you also would have had to figure at some point that with civil rights becoming the norm and enforced by the government, rightfully so, that at that point the economic engine, you know, the catch-up game would have begun. So,
right.
They never really got a chance. People got the right to vote. They got the civil rights, you know, equality, and then bam, and they got bought off.
Oh yeah, and you look at other things that happened since then. You know, part of the so-called war on poverty, part of all of the other stuff that they put into place. You know, back in the 60s when they started putting all these mass sex education programs into schools, for example, because we had this so-called crisis of teenage pregnancies and all kinds of venereal diseases. And guess what? Teenage pregnancies and venereal diseases have been going down for years. One of the big things back there, and I know people don't like the subject sometimes, but one of the big things back then was gonorrhea. Gonorrhea declined every year from 1950 through 1959. And by 1960, the syphilis, which was the second largest one, was half of what it had been in 1950. But once we started putting sex education into schools, well, then all of a sudden, these daggone venereal diseases and everything else skyrocketed. Then all of a sudden, we started having skyrocketing teenage pregnancy, for example. The genie was out of the bottle. You look at the murder rate. I mean, this is another one that's disturbing. In 1960, only half, the murder rate was only half of what it had been in 1934 during the Great Depression. I mean, that's incredible information. But once they changed the criminal laws in the 60s, by 1974, just a few short years later, the murder rate was twice as high as it was back then. So, you know, we got to look at all of this stuff because the war on poverty has made more people live in poverty. It's cost us trillions of dollars, and as we know, poverty is what leads to crime, murder, and things like that. So, you know, this is what we've got to deal with. And this all started with the laws and everything else that Lyndon Johnson and those guys put into place with the so-called war on poverty. I mean, is there any arguing about that?
Well, as always, you know, I'll complicate matters. There's all sorts of demographics and other things that factor into it. But, yeah, I say, you know, and having said that, I've always been one that said, look, we need to look at everything. We need to look at the war on poverty. We need, you know, and these things that, and the funny thing is when you get them, and again, both parties have their sacred cows that you just don't talk about. You just don't bring up for discussion. You don't bring up for amendments, and as far as the Democrats go, this is one of them. You don't review. You know, they reel at the thought of an affirmative action. You know, somebody challenging affirmative action or challenging, you know, any kind of welfare programs or anything like that. And the fact of the matter is, we're a vastly different country. We're 50 plus years removed. We need to look at some of the things. We need to look at, okay, you know, certain things might have been good in practice back then coming out of the Ozzie and Harriet era. Maybe we need to look at them. It's like, hey, did this create a dependent? Did this make a problem go away? Did this keep a problem from getting bigger? Or did this cause the problem to get bigger? You know, we need to look at it. Everything. Because it's messed up on so many levels. Up to and including just the, you know, the education as far as, you know, separate but equal and busing. And we look right here in Louisville with one of the largest bus fleets in the nation. How much money are we pissing away on that we could be spending on the kids, but we're spending on biofuel, diesel fuel, and bus maintenance?
Well, you're absolutely right in a lot of that, but I mean, the facts here are clear for me anyway. When I'm looking at all of this, it's very clear.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying I could look at those numbers and say, okay, yeah, that might be the bulk of it, but there are always other factors, you know, up to and including, you know, you're talking about the sex and stuff and the drugs. You know, one could factor in that there was an exploding middle class after World War II, and the boomers went and got their degrees, and industry was booming, and parents who grew up in the Depression wanted their kids to have more stuff. So, you know, they were a little bit more showered with, you know, not told no as often. Then these kind of things factor in too. But I'm not debating that. Yes, absolutely. the social programs of the government and stuff have something to do with it. But I'm saying there's always other things too.
Well, I'm sure there's other things, and part of the rest of the problem is a real simple one. Every time the government makes a mistake, then they go in and try to fix it, and they just complicate it. You know, this is one of the things that the reason I bring up all these examples.
You're right. They never back up and get the eraser out and go, "Whoa, that was a mistake. Let's erase that and try it again."
Right.
They always add to it. They always think, "Well, if that didn't work, let's just add a little more to the law and complicate it a little more. Maybe that'll fix it."
Well, and you know, and that brings us right back to where this started, Obamacare, because this is another liberal policy that is destined to be a failure. It's very clear from the outset that this is going to be a failure, that it's going to be another program that we, the American people, are going to pour money into an open pit that we'll never fill, you know, for nothing, and we're not going to help the people that are supposed to help. And I tell you why that's important, because at the same time all of this is going on, I'm looking at the Washington Examiner today, and I'm reading a story here. Guy by the name of David John Murata. Now, you guys may not know who that name is, but he's a very influential Wall Street advisor. I mean, this guy knows numbers. And he's finally coming out of woodwork and telling everybody that the White House, the Federal Reserve, and the Treasury Department are basically lying, that they're using fraudulent numbers to deceive the American people. He says, and this is something I told everybody last night, you know, and I've been talking about for a while, David John Murata says that the actual unemployment rate of those not working is actually 37.2%, not the 6.7% that the Fed and everybody else is throwing out there, but it's 37.2%. And that number makes sense, folks. Use your head. We've got over 92 million Americans who are unemployed today. 92 million Americans are unemployed out of a nation of slightly over 300 million. I mean, it makes sense. That number actually makes more sense than anything. How they come up with this 6.7% is they don't count people whose benefits have expired. They don't count people who finally gave up because they can't find a job. They take, if you're unemployed and you're not on the government dime, they forget about you. So they don't count you. And then you've got a thing called the misery index, Ed. The misery index right now is over 14. You know, talk to me. What's going on?
Well, the misery index, of course, it involves wage stagnation, inflation, and everything else. It's just the complicated, you know. I guess the best way to summarize the misery index is, you know, go to the grocery store. You got to fill your car up, you know, it's a combination of all the factors. And yeah. You know, the worst thing that can happen with the misery index is happening with the misery index. We have unemployment, we have inflation, we have underemployment, we have wage stagnation, you know, and now we're adding expenses to it. For a lot of people, we're adding expenses to it in the form of mandated insurance. And I mean, it's just the misery index is, I've always enjoyed the misery index and always referred, you know, when I found to get in discussion, I refer to stagflation as inflation's really, really evil cousin.
Right.
We're there, you know. And like I say, I'm with you on the numbers as far as the unemployed goes, because you know the government has a really crappy, you know, they don't. Well, let me just say, the best stock advisor, the best financial advisor I ever had, always told me, just come, you know. Trust what you see out in the world. You know, don't mind all the crap. Trust what you see. You know, and I tell you, I see people out there that, you know, when we were booming, we might have had dual household income. You know, wife might have worked part-time. She doesn't work part-time anymore. Guess what? That's
right.
Job. She's not working anymore, but she never got counted on unemployment. There's so many, you know, and a lot of times people derive part-time jobs. Sometimes it's what works for people, but they want. Now they're losing those jobs, but they don't get counted. So, yeah, I'm with this guy. Yeah. And you fall off the rolls.
Well, it's interesting because if you look at the definition of unemployment, I mean, unemployment is basically defined as involuntary idleness of workers. That's it. It's that simple. So we've got 92 million Americans who are unemployed. That means they are involuntarily idled. So, you know, when we look at all of this stuff, you know, and everything else, realize that the truest definition means that there's a portion of people who don't have any job, and that's 37.2%. It's very disturbing because they can't find a way to work. You know, some are not able to, so you can't count them as employed. So when you look at the definition, we've got 92 million Americans that are identified as unemployed. That's not Americans who aren't able to. That's not Americans who don't want to. Those are Americans who are counted as involuntarily being idle. And this is what's disturbing to me because this is where the White House fails. And it just makes no sense to me. So now we've got all of this crap going on. The misery index, as you mentioned, it involves inflation and unemployment. You know, but all of those are, once again, being skewed by the government as well. You know, they don't even calculate all the money that you know, our government, our Uncle Sam, is putting into the economy with bond purchases and all this other stuff. These are nothing more than accounting gimmicks. So it helps them to underreport inflation at least 3%. You know, the official inflation rate is roughly 1.24%. You know, but when you look at all of this stuff and play it, I mean, this has got to be an orchestrated plan, does it not?
Well, absolutely. And once again, in all fairness, this was not just orchestrated recently. This started back in the Reagan years and stuff, when they begin to change, you know, when things aren't good and people don't like what they see, sometimes the best way is just change the metric. You know, what is unemployed? What is inflation? I mean, you need a sliding scale for inflation now. If a steak costs, you know, $4 a pound, you know, so if you want a decent sized steak, you know, whatever, you know what I'm saying? And it's like, they just, instead of steak, they'll say, okay, well, you know, steak, same protein intake, yeah, we're going to move it, you know, move it from sirloin down to, you know, the Burger Pro or something like that. They constantly slide the scale on what they factor inflation on. So it's just an unbelievable lie. They constantly, they're always moving the scale to suit their purposes. I mean, like I say, I know a lot of Republicans don't want to hear it, but Reagan was the first one to redefine what unemployment was. So,
right.
Yeah, the numbers are going to get a lot better. As you said, unemployed is defined as people involuntarily unable to work, you know, out of work. Reagan redefined it as you're not actively looking for work, you're not unemployed anymore. I guess at that point they decide you're voluntarily out of work.
Well, okay. But, so out of that 92 million.
Everybody slides the scale to suit their needs. And the thing is the Democrats may complain about what Reagan did. My God, when they get in, they don't put the scale back where it was, do they? They're like, oh, okay, well, that kind of works now that we're in power. Cool.
That, well, you know, but the thing is, though, I mean, it's just going to some major extremes right now. I mean, this is a president who has already said he's going to use executive order and executive action to do anything he wants to. He's already proven that Congress is meaningless by making all these changes to Obamacare, you know, without going through Congress to do so, because that is the law. And, you know, then we go on top of that, all the lies and scandals, Fast and Furious, Benghazi, and everything else. I mean, this to me, is setting up to be basically an insider coup for the elite. And that's all I can see. You know, and then you throw on top of that, and this is where a lot of people have a problem. I'm going to switch to Colorado real quick. Here you've got almost half of Americans depending on government for their daily needs, okay? Our Americans, that the few that are working anymore, are paying taxes that are funding your food stamps, Section 8, all the other things. And yet in Colorado, you've got the pot shops have ATMs inside of that shop. Welfare recipients are actually withdrawing cash on their EBT cards, their food stamp cards, and using that cash to buy marijuana. This creates a major division between the thought process of most of us. For one thing, if you've got a food stamp card, it has to be spent on food. You shouldn't be allowed to withdraw cash on it in any amount. That's not what its intended use is. That's not what was agreed to. That's not what we're funding. We're funding you to give you a meal. We're not giving you money to go buy a pot. You know, so Colorado is actually trying to, they're getting together trying to make it tougher for that. But, you know, at the same time, why are we in this position? Because the government decided it's okay to use these EBT cards as a regular debit card and get cash when that was not its intended purpose. So once again, they've screwed up and won't take responsibility, and now they're trying to say, we don't know what we're going to do. How does that make sense?
I tell you what, that makes absolutely no sense to me. You know, switching it for cash, it's like, I hear that, and it's like, yeah, you know, we all know about the war on drugs on one side, but if you take the EBT card and convert it to cash, you're, like it or not, you're funding, in some cases, that's exactly what you're funding. You're funding, you know, this is war on tobacco, war on alcohol, war on drugs. That's exactly what you're funding when you allow people to do cash, because if, you know, if they were just buying food, they wouldn't need cash. They just swipe the card like they do. But if you're going cash, that's because they're going underground on the purchase. That's, you know, you didn't need cash. You're going underground. You're going off the grid. You're going outside. You're coloring outside the lines, as I like to say, on what you're purchasing. So, sort of defeats the purpose completely of what the nanny state that wants to make sure we don't do this or don't do that. And then when they let EBT cards or any other thing go cash and they don't track it properly, then you know, the right hand saying no, the left hand saying, well, here's a little cash, you know.
What's interesting here, too, the Democrats in Colorado in the state legislature are trying to fight that. They're trying to fight the Republicans who are trying to stop you from being allowed to use your EBT card at a pot shop to get pot. And they're trying to say that there are so many neighborhoods who don't have a lot of ATMs that until the legislature addresses that issue, you know, the private market and force people to have ATMs, until the legislature addresses that issue, then they shouldn't be sitting there worrying about people using their EBT cards getting money at an ATM at a pot shop. And here's the thing, man, because when you get into Colorado, all right, they've got a list of where you can't use EBT cards to withdraw cash, which you should be doing anyway. Let's assume
nowhere.
We're going to go with this. Yeah, let's assume we're going to go with this.
Nowhere.
Oh, yeah. Well, here in Kentucky, they do it all the time. They do it all the time. Here in Kentucky, your EBT card is a debit card, and they use it as such. You know, but the list that Colorado uses currently will not allow you to use an ATM and get any cash on an EBT card at an ATM at casinos, gun, and liquor stores. That's it. You can use your EBT card, your food stamp card. You can use that at a strip club if you want, and you can use it at a pot shop. So take your EBT card to your local ATM at the local pot shop, go in and get you a quarter ounce, smoke a couple of joints, then go to the strip club, take the rest of the money out, and spend it for your daggone lap dances. You know, I mean, this is ridiculous. This is what we're funding, and this is what conservatives get angry about. This is what they get angry about, because we continue talking about, you know, all the abuses. This is a clear example of abuse, right?
Oh, it is, but I would qualify it by saying that although it can be done, as far as a percentage goes, I would say 99% of the people are, for the most part, using their EBT cards properly. They're using it for food. They may spend a little bit, you know, and if they get some cash, they're going to still buy food, but it's maybe something that's not EBT authorized. Which also begs the question, if as I would assert, it's probably a very, very small percentage, why have it at all? Who in the hell are you trying to placate with a stupid-ass allowance like that?
What you're trying to placate is a low-educated voter. What you're trying to placate is get to that Democratic vote. That's why the Democrats fight anytime you want to talk about this. Because that 1% are more likely to vote Democrat in the next election because, literally, they survive on what the Democrats are handing out. And that was the intent.
I'd say you're right there. I'd say absolutely. The people who are abusing their EBT cards are probably good, you know, if the Democrats are fighting for their right to, you know, to keep them able to where they can abuse their EBT cards, then you bet your ass that is a that's a bought voter right there.
Sure it is. And that's exactly what's happened. That's why the Democrats have been able to maintain power in so many ways, because they go out and they buy the vote. And this they use our tax money to buy elections. And it's crazy. It's crazy. You know, and we can't get fixed because nobody wants to take personal responsibility anymore. Why should you? The government's going to give you a card that you can go use to buy pot. You can go get lap dances from the stripper. They're going to give you a card. If you decide you're going to use it for a meal, you will. If you decide you don't, you're not. They're going to pay for housing with Section 8, so all you got to do is pay 20 or 30 bucks a month for your daggone three-bedroom apartment or three-bedroom house. You know, so they're going to feed you. They're going to shelter you. And then they're going to give you clothing, too. I mean, what else do you have to have? Three basics in life. And that's the problem. Now, I'm not saying that the majority of people are doing that. I do think that you're being overly generous. You're only allowing 1% in fraud. But I'm just using it as an example.
Yeah, I mean, it's there. So it's probably, like you say, major fraud, major where people are doing, like you say, getting stoned, going to strip club and that. I'd say that's a very, very small percentage. And I'd say the vast majority are buying food. And I'd say they may, like I say, even those people, like you said, they may get some cash and buy their kid a toy that they want or something. I don't think it's arrogant abuse. I don't think it's rampant abuse. But like I say, statistically speaking, if we said, let's say it's 1%, then I say, all right, why are you bending the whole metric for one stinking percent that are probably abusing it? You know, it's like, oh,
but I say,
people are abusing it. Great, then end the program.
I disagree to an extent, but I tell you, I can't prove these numbers. So I would sit here and tell you that this is a guess, but I would guess that 30 to 40% of everybody who has EBT uses that card for cash on occasion. Now, I'm not saying they're using it to go get wasted. I'm not saying they're using it at strip clubs. But they are using it for cash on some occasions for something. They may just need a night out to buy a couple of drinks and get away from the kids for a while.
We can hope that they're using it for bus fare or to pay a babysitter or something like that. We can hope. Yeah.
But, you know, it's not my responsibility to pay a babysitter either. If you can't afford to go out and pay your babysitter, then you need to be at home taking care of your children. Okay, so I know that sounds extreme, but I would say that 30 to 40% of people have used that EBT for cash, and that's where the problem is. You're not going to get this government to sit here and give you the breakdown of how much we actually spend on a month-to-month basis on food. Oh, I can get that information for you. I can tell you what we spend every year for the EBT system, but I can't tell you how much of that is converted to cash. They will not break that down. It's the simplest thing in the world to break down, but they refuse to do it. And this is why. Because they don't want us to know. They don't want us to know. And that's a problem because we continue going down this road of lies and deceit, as we have found out with the real unemployment rate, as we have found out with Obamacare, as we have found out with anything and everything that's coming from this administration. Now, I'm not saying Barack Obama started this plan. As you mentioned before, President Reagan is the one with the unemployment, for example, who started refiguring how we do that. However, this administration is the most secretive, the most manipulative, and the most lying administration I've ever seen in my life. It's like everything bad that can happen, this administration has decided to put themselves on steroids to do it. It's pathetic, man. And these are just more examples of that. You know, now we've got problems in Detroit as well. You know, they're trying to figure out this whole bankruptcy thing, and they're arguing with judges and all this other stuff because one of the other things that nobody wants to talk about, this is the red herring in the room. This is disturbing all of these states. This is taking even more money that we can't use for education and the other things, is the unfunded pension liabilities. That's what made Detroit go into bankruptcy. And now they're trying to get out of bankruptcy, and the judges are fighting with them over it. Because of casino money that Detroit had pledged towards a bunch of bonds that they had bought in 2005 and 2006. So what did that do? Detroit goes into bankruptcy. Detroit is a ghost town. Now you have millions more people that are sitting here on the public dime. You know, it's a round robin, man. It's a circle. It's a circle jerk full of lies and manipulation to control we the people. That's the way I look at it. I don't know, man. Maybe I'm wrong. You think I'm wrong? I don't know.
Oh, no, I don't. I say it. But for me, the thing we always have to be careful about is it's not just a left-wing thing. You know, we could spend hours on the banking thing, which, you know, when you did get into corporate subsidies, are much more egregious and much bigger numbers. And, you know, you want to talk about guys pissing money away. There they are right there. It happens on both sides because it's political class. They take care of their own. Whether they take care of those who take care of, you know, of them. If it's a low educated, low cost, but lots of voters they can buy with an EBT card, they do it. If it's some big fat corporate donors that they can buy by legislating rules that are favorable to the corporation and that crap all over everybody else, they do it. Because ultimately it's all about a bunch of narcissistic, short-sighted politicians who are one way or the other are out to feather their nest and screw you. That's really what it comes down to.
Oh, I hear you, man. I tell you, it's historically getting disgusting that we continue going through this. And I tell you, there's one other thing that we continue to do. Happens every night about this time. This is the fastest hour on radio. We are out of time. Ed, final thoughts.
You know, I always end it with be cynical. And it's whether it's not just a right-wing or a left-wing thing. It's not whether you read Saul's article and, you know, don't take anything in gospel. I don't because, you know, as we had this discussion tonight, the first thing I'll say, well, it's a little more complicated than that. There's other factors than that. I don't think anybody that's an ideologue, they're pushing an agenda. I take it with a grain of salt, and I, you know, I try to think, okay, well, maybe you've got a point, but you don't have the point. You know, it's not the only point. So, as always, I just tell our listeners and our viewers, be cynical, question everything you hear. Hell, question what you hear on this radio show. You know, sometimes we're known to be full of crap. But question everything. The information's out there. I always tell my kids, it's like, God, you guys are growing up in a magical age. And with a few clicks of a mouse, you can figure out what's cool. You can find out what happened last week in some village in the middle of nowhere, China. This is amazing. You can figure out what happened. You know, you can put the pieces together if you put just a little bit of time and very little effort into it. Being cynical can pay dividends.
You know, and I agree with you. You need to be cynical. But, you know, when we say that you take everything with a grain of salt, for me, When I look at these issues, and for one thing, you're absolutely right. Check us out. Fact check us. Do whatever you need to do. Google is your friend. I know people are here to Google. There's some people out there in the New World Order that think Google is spying on everything you do. Well, believe what you want, but there's a hell of a lot of valuable information on Google or Bing or whatever you choose to search. And you can verify what we're talking about. The most disturbing thing about everything that we discuss on this radio show is the fact that in the last 30 years, mainstream media sold out and dropped the ball, because the only place you're hearing the truth and hearing the numbers and all the other things that we give you is on your alternate media. Places like this, online radio, websites like mine, legalpolitics.com. You know, you have to go to alternate media to get the truth, because mainstream media refuses to be the state. That's just the way it is. And that was more disturbing probably than anything Barack Obama's doing, is the fact that the people who should be out there challenging authority, that have made a history of that until about 25 or 30 years ago, you don't have an Edward Murrow, you don't have a Walter Cronkite anymore. What you have is a bunch of robotic, unintelligent people who are given a press release to put out that they don't verify the information, and somehow they call themselves journalists. It's disgusting to me. It should be disgusting to you. Get out, get active, get involved. That's it for tonight. Tomorrow night, right here, same time, same channel, 7 o'clock, Dale the Truth Gillespie will be with us, as always, on Wednesday. And, Mr. Martin, I guess I'll see you on Monday night.
All right, sir.
Have a great week, sir. We appreciate being here.
You do the same.
All right. Folks, have a great night, and we will talk to you soon. Thank you so much for listening. Take care.